anybody who is anybody will soon walk through that door at Fat Sam's Grand Slam. Speakeasy. Hello and welcome to the fast food meal that is the Libero podcast. I'm your Big Mac, Richard Mead, and with me today is the Whopper that is Chris Belmore. Say hello, Chris.
Om nom nom.
Nice. And another person who's nothing but supersized, Matt Pritchard.
Good afternoon, evening. I was wondering why I wasn't the Whopper.
I think we both know.
Wimpy.
Let's start at the only place to start this week, which is Big Sam's 100% England record celebration party.
Rule Britannia!
Absolutely. Things are back on track, surely.
Ingerland.
Ingerland, as only a Welshman could say it. I take we all seen the game. Everything's as it should be, surely, guys.
Oh, it was top notch. It was a performance to be proud of. I think open up Big Sam's account with some free flowing football. You know, some high quality, lots of goals. Hammer one of these little minnow teams. No, it wasn't. It was an absolute bore-a-thon.
I was watching it on the laptop and playing FIFA on the TV, and I think that there was probably an 80-20 ratio of eye split. I'll let you figure out which way it went.
What was the FIFA game? You would have got through a few.
Yeah. My amazing career game that I've started with Colchester.
Colchester, big shout out to them. More of that later. But fair to say, to use a cliche, not a classic, but a win's a win. It's a results business. You know, what more can you ask of Big Sam on his first game? I thought some of the vitriol coming out was a bit harsh. I mean, there was
It was always going to be, wasn't it? He was in kind of a lose-lose situation. He comes out, he wins. Unless they won 5-0, ripped them to pieces, playing like the 1960s Brazilian team, he was never going to win in that game.
And then he would have just set himself up for a loss the next time, because they're not going to play like the Brazilian team every time.
I like the way it's like you describe it as a lose-lose situation. So what does Big Sam do? He fucking wins it.
Absolutely. Big Sam comes to a lose-lose situation and he wins. That's what he does. No, but seriously, like, I saw a lot of piss-taking on Twitter and go, Snorathon, nothing happening, same old England. I mean, this is an England team, with all due respect, you know, that disappointed at the Euros. They drew to the very same team 3 months ago and played far, far better. And whatever way you cut it, they played this team again on Sunday and won. And as I said, it's a results business. And I'm not sure how harsh you can be on Big Sam or any of the players when you've come off the back of what is a deeply demoralising and basically disappointing tournament. And then you've come back and you've gone, right, we're starting again. We won all our group games last time to qualify. We've come in and we've won our first game against a team that we drew with in the tournament itself. I don't think that there's too many negatives to take from that, from the performance is what it is, though.
Yeah, it was pretty average performance, but, you know, a win's a win's a win. Like, I don't think there's too much to say with that respect with regards to the game itself. Like, it was, as Matt said, it was pretty dull. I didn't think there was much going on with England. I thought same old team playing the same old way. Bizarre to see Walcott coming on. Bizarre to see Rooney. I mean, the massive talking point is obviously Rooney playing midfield and the quotes that came out from Big Sam after the game. It's not for me to say where he's going to play. I think that is actually for you to say. I think that's literally your fucking job.
Yeah, I really didn't get this. I know he's nude. I kind of, what's come out since has been...
Did you say, I know he's nude?
Yeah, it did sound like that.
Have you got him on video chat somewhere?
He's new to international management. He's got a player who's played 100 million times for England. He's the captain. And Sam has come out and said since that, you know, Rooney should have some sort of input into how the team plays or how he might play in a system. Which, to a certain extent, I can understand. But you should have the final say in where your players play on the pitch when you pick the starting 11.
Yeah.
And whatever way he looks at it, in the first half of that game, it did not work. Rooney was kind of playing the left side of a midfield three with Dier and Henderson, from what I could tell.
Yeah, new quote. he did play a little deeper than I thought he'd play. Well, fucking tell him where to play. I'm sorry, I really don't buy into this. Like, oh, he's a capped player. He's the captain, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't give a fuck. Like, I don't think that the best managers have any sentiment for that. And they want people to play, you know, and to perform in the system and do the job that they need to do. And yeah, I think Rooney just has a habit of slowing everything down. He hits those fucking Hollywood passes all the time. It used to piss me off so much about Gerrard, like 80, 90-yard passes to the far wing. And it's like, yeah, they look nice, but they totally slow down the entire game. And my God, yeah, I know there's going to be dispute about this, but I think Lallana was played very, very well. I really like him for England. I think he never slows play down. I think he always keeps it moving as fast as possible. And I want more players like that.
I was kind of in the anti-Lallana camp until this season. I think this season he started the season really well. I think he finished this, actually since Klopp took over at Liverpool, I think he's improved as a player tenfold, and I think you can see that in some of his performances. He was comfortably England's best player on the weekend when they played Slovakia. He was comfortably head and shoulders above anybody else. The only way a goal was going to come was going to be through Lallana, either him scoring it or him setting it up.
Yeah,
I mean, just like, I like the way he just closes down constantly. He never seems to get tired. He's good with both feet. He doesn't have to play the way he's facing. He can spin and turn, and I just think that's all good things. I like having him and Dele Alli in the team because they're both like that in that respect. They can both close down and they can, you know, play on the turn and keep it moving and get out of tight situations and all those things that people like Wayne Rooney just don't seem to be able to do. And his go-to is just he's a good player and he's an excellent passer of the ball, and you know, he's got a lot to offer. I just don't want to see him like 60 yards from goal, 50 yards from goal, hitting massive long passes to that other wing all game. It's like, fine, drop back and do it, you know, it helps sometimes and it switches the play, but it becomes very, very predictable. And people like Walcott just aren't good enough to make anything of that out wide. If it doesn't drop perfectly for them in behind, he's got nothing to do, and all he can do is come backwards.
And with all due respect, like, it's great including people like Walcott, but as you said, one is the quality there, and two, if you're going to play at this slow and ponderous pace that England have done, and certainly did do on the night, you're not going to get the best out of those players anyway, the kind of counter-attacking speed and pace that really hurts teams. If people are going to sit off them and we're just going to pass the ball around slowly, then you're not going to get the best out of those players.
I don't think it has to be counter-attacking football either. We were talking about this last week's pod with, you know, that Sterling is benefiting from the chaos that Man City team creates just from playing faster. Like, they can counter-attack, but counter-attacking is not their thing. It's just quick passing side to side, short passes, get it moving, move the defence around, and then suddenly he's got 20 yards of space to run into. Absolutely. That's not what Walcott gets. Walcott gets the ball out wide. He can run down the line, but he never beats anyone, and then all he does is cuts it back, and that's all there is to it.
But the thing, from what you're talking about with Rooney, is the thing that against these sort of teams, that those long spraying balls don't work, because those sorts of teams will always sit 5 or 10 yards deeper because they know they're not going to go at England. So they're going to sit deep and England can have a space to come onto them. But when you hit long crossfield balls, all they do is just as a team of, you know, 8 behind the ball, 10 behind the ball, they just shift as a unit to the other side of the pitch. It doesn't isolate defenders. It doesn't take players out of the game. They just shift an entire unit to the other side of the pitch. What you need to do is get players who are going to actually commit defenders and commit midfields and take them out of the game.
Or players who are going to play like 3 or 4 passes in quick succession and you know, bomb on and charge and like basically make, you know, strange shallow diagonal runs in the centre of the park to open up that space. But again, we don't really have anyone who seems to be given license to do that. Off those midfield three, it's like Henderson runs up and down a lot. Rooney sits deeper, occasionally gets forward and hits it very long, and then whoever else is left, which is usually Dyer, is obviously the sitter. So there's no one who plays the role that someone like David Silva plays at City.
So, you know, you make a good point there, and I've listened to a couple of podcasts this week, and the point has been raised of, okay, it's almost the same players that you guys took to the Euros, but if you look at what's about, what else is about? Who didn't make that squad that you think would have, you know, oh shit, how didn't Barkley? Barkley's not really beyond that good.
Marcus Rashford, hat-trick hero.
Absolutely.
You know, he's
yeah, I think you're right there.
You know, it's not as if you're leaving out a David Silva or a, you know, a Santi Cazorla or an Iniesta. You're not leaving out one of these players who's going to completely change the way you guys play.
No, it's weird because we've got the players to do it. If you look at, like, I thought Walker and Rose, again, both had excellent games. I think Rose has come on absolutely leaps and bounds since he got back from his loan move with Sunderland a couple of seasons ago. I think he's a totally different player now. I'm sure some of that was down to playing regularly at Sunderland when he wasn't before. And then, you know, like I said, we've got Lallana and we've got Dele Alli, and Henderson plays in the very aggressive, like, Klopp team, Sterling playing in that Man City team. And so the players can play that way. And it's just weird that for the sake of a few players like the Rooneys and that, who don't necessarily, I mean, I think Rooney could definitely play that system if you needed to put him in. He's energetic. He's not the quickest, but his movement's very, very intelligent. It just seems, you know, I'm a casual fan. It seems very obvious to me that that's the way he should play. But I'd love to see that group of players given license to play that way on a more regular basis, because I think they all do it for their club teams. It'd be cool to see what would happen if you let them do it for their international teams.
And also to just to extend upon that point and just go back to the Rooney situation, which obviously I imagine we'll dwell on in future podcasts as well. It's not the frustration that Rooney's in the squad. It's the frustration that Rooney's in the squad and playing a position that other teams can play better. It's just, you know, what is with that? You know, it's like, if we're going to play him in midfield, as you've just listed a whole bunch of midfielders and wingers that we've got in that situation, you know, Dele Alli, Dia, you know, Henderson, we've got players in those positions who can fill a role in a formation that Big Sam would want. We don't need someone who's not really a striker, not really a midfielder, tracking back. I mean, I think there was a stat somewhere that he didn't touch the ball in the opposition's penalty box at all in that game. And what kind of function is he serving there? You know, if you're going to pick him in his best position. Yeah, if you don't know what it is, don't pick him.
If you're going to play a 4-3-3 and you're not going to play him up top, there's no position for him. If you're going to play an attacking midfielder, fine, or you know, a number 10, fine. Play him in a 4-2-3-1. I probably wouldn't. I'd probably pick Dele Alli over him and bring him on later or something like that. But you know, fine if you want to. It's just weird. It smacks of like the old classic when we were you know, kids growing up, when like Scholes would be put out on the left wing. Absolute travesty because of, you know, Lampard and Gerrard and whoever else is in the middle. But to fit Scholes in, we have to shoehorn him out to the left, where he's totally ineffectual.
I thought Dele Alli played quite well when he came on. I thought he provided a little bit of energy ahead of the midfield, and probably the thing that was missing when Rooney was there.
You know, he goes beyond the striker as well, which is obviously the opposite of what Rooney was doing. And that, again, that's another thing that creates space, is being prepared to push past and then drag defenders around, and that frees up the striker, you know.
What do we think of Harry Kane's form at the moment?
Yeah, I wanted to come onto this at some point. He's not had a good start of the season. In fact, he's not been good since the tail end of last season. He's had he played a huge amount of games last season, Harry Kane. He was absolutely, you know, he played brilliantly last season. He scored a lot of goals. He's incredibly important to Tottenham. And then he's had a Euros tournament that's not only been disappointing, like the end of the last season would have been for him after that much effort, but he's also had a lot of, you know, the whole of that team had a lot of criticism. He's not had as much time off. He's come straight back into the Spurs team where he's important. I know that he's sharing a bit of time with Janssen. And now, obviously, he's back in an England shirt. And he's not up to speed yet. Or he's lost a bit of confidence. I think that needs to be regained before we see the real Harry Kane, you know, back and firing.
Yeah, I mean, the confidence thing is always a bit of a, you know, a bit of like a catch-all term for when we don't know what it is. But he didn't actually start last season very well. It took him quite a while to build up, and it was when it kind of hit. I wonder if it was even after the new year. I can't remember, but it seemed like very late into the season when he started smashing them in and returning to form. I wonder if he's just a kind of, you know, he's a bit of a slow starter when it comes to new seasons.
Well, I'm pretty sure I've seen a stat saying he hasn't scored in August.
Ever?
For at least the last two seasons he's been in problems.
Yeah, he doesn't. I definitely remember, I can't remember whether he started his sort of breakthrough season on fire. But yeah, in fact, I don't think he did, because I think he kind of came into the team late. And yeah, certainly
he did
last
through
season,
the Europa League.
Yeah, I was going to say he's a Europa League striker, yeah.
Yeah, and then last season he was pretty slow. So yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, he's not a bad player. I don't think he's, I don't know what confidence means. You know, obviously players try things. I don't know what it means practically in the sort of, you know, in the effect that it has on different players' games. But he doesn't look like someone who, he looks like he's getting in okay positions. Working hard. He's just dragging shots.
I thought you said you didn't know what confidence means. Just full stop. I was like, do we need like a dictionary definition of the word confidence?
Well, a team that isn't lacking confidence and isn't lacking goals, Matthew Pritchard, is Wales.
That is a delicious segue, by the way.
Is Wales. Segue. Well, thank you, I try. Wales form Moldova
as well.
Zero. You know, it's not funny if you have to explain it. Wales 4, Moldova 0. An easy night for the Welshman.
It was an easy night, and it was one where actually it's a bit of a flip side for Wales, because since the Euros it's a different kind of position Wales find ourselves in. Now we're going into these games expecting to win.
We're fucking big dogs of Europe!
Yeah.
I know at the even for the qualifying for the Euros, there was a little bit of expectation, but we went into our first game of the last campaign. I think we drew against Macedonia, I think, or it might have even lost away to Macedonia. I know we drew to Macedonia, but it's one of those games that we were expected to win and we didn't. Whereas this one, it was actually a really confident performance by Wales. I think we were helped quite a lot by a shocking Moldova.
Oh my god. The keeper had an absolute mare. Like that, I mean, I think I would say probably goals 1, 2, and 4 were.
You know those situations where where you get a keeper gets a red card and there's an outfield player in goal, and it makes it so apparent how hard it is to be a goalkeeper. That's what I'm sure happened. It was so shoddy. So shoddy.
I mean, there could have been a few penalties and things like that, but the ball was whipped in and Sam Vokes, you know, he got above the defender who wasn't really jumping and he got a header on the ball, but it wasn't a particularly powerful header and it was kind of straight at the keeper in the centre of the goal and he headed it down, you know, but if a keeper had saved that, you wouldn't have said, fantastic save. You'd have thought like, oh, should have buried it. Allen's was just kind of passed back in, you know, again, almost straight at the keeper. The penalty, Bale's penalty, was like really weird. It's like he tried to psych out the keeper to send him the wrong way. The keeper didn't move, and then Bale still kicked it down the middle. It was about a foot away from the keeper's right foot, and for some reason he wasn't able to stick it out and get it. It was all very bizarre. The third goal was an excellent chip finish, I have to say, but even that came after some shonky defending.
Yeah, really shonky defending.
Yeah, he was past the ball by the right back. You know, it was an easy win. Let's not get away from that fact, but a win is a win. There were 30,000 people in the Cardiff City Stadium, which is quite nice. Good to see that full. Good to see we're kind of carrying on the good vibes from the Euros. We got kind of quite a structured team. I think looking at the team, and this is something I've heard a couple of people say, we almost look like a club side because I think everybody knows we've got a structure and a system that we play in, and it doesn't matter. We can take players out of the team and put other players in to a certain extent. We haven't got a great deal of depth. We can transfer players in and out, but the structure stays the same.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a fair shout. And I think that different striking options in particular bring slightly different ways of playing. So, you know, if you want to go with your like big bulldozer up top who doesn't get millions of goals, but, you know, plays that way, you've got people like that. But if you want to, you know, I don't think you've got phenomenal pace, but if you want to bring in someone...
Harold Robson-Carney hasn't got phenomenal pace. I'm not hearing
it. You want to bring in someone who's a bit more mobile and, you know, runs the channels a lot more than Vokes, and you've got that option too. Obviously, Bale can play up top on his own, and it's, you know, I like it. It's a good setup.
And I think, like, just to pick up on Matt's point and almost copy it almost, but the momentum that they got coming out of the Euros, they were a surprise package of the Euros. They were, as you say, they played like a club team. Everyone got behind them, you know, even supporters in England, and, you know, you just wanted them to do well. And
Joe Hart.
Yeah. But it's a case of, like, that momentum's carrying over, and I know that the pressures will be slightly different now. You know, I think the odds are much shorter for them qualifying this time for the World Cup. But it's nice to see, like you say, that stadium filled, like, and you feel like the crowd is behind them. Whereas with England, you feel like the crowd and the media are ready to lynch them at the first possible poor performance, like they were, even though they won on Sunday. With Wales
have had like 50 years of shit, so it's about time that they, you know, and it's nice to see that, you know, they're having a run of good fortune, and yeah, they're like trying to make the most of it, and they had, you know, looking back, like they had a decent-ish like Euros. They had some good moments, they had some good victories, and yeah, hopefully they can push on. It's interesting to see that Bale is already nearly level with who's your top scorer, Ian Rush.
Yeah,
he's already got like 24 goals, really, and Rush is on 28, isn't he?
Yeah, he'll do that.
Won't be a problem.
He'll do that this season comfortably.
Yeah,
comfortably.
That'd be nice.
It has surprised me. I, you know, I've loved watching Gareth Bale play for Wales, but I haven't always seen that he's scored a lot of goals. We don't score a lot of goals in our qualifying campaign for the Euros. We didn't score a lot of goals. You know, we won a lot of games by 1 and 2 goals. So it does surprise me. He's got to level. It's not exactly like Sir Bobby Charlton's record or Gary Lineker, you know, 50-60, it's 24 goals, it's 28 goals, it's not exactly set in the world.
Or indeed Robbie Keane, big shout out to Robbie Keane.
So it's not exactly a mammoth goal tally to overcome, but at the same time, it's not too bad.
Like I said, I think it's just nice to see them come out and not with heads low or with like, oh no, you know, going back to any kind of mentality that, you know, this is little Wales or whatever. Or, you know, they've come out, they've still got their structure, as you've pointed out, they've still got their momentum, and they look, you know, obviously a poor opponent, but they look decent. It'd be nice to see how they get on.
I think the English fans certainly the ones I talk to like seeing the home nations do well in football. I don't think we feel aggrieved, and even if they're, you know, above us in the rankings and doing better, I just think it's not quite the same relationship as like perhaps how Scotland feel about England. Like, I would be happy to see Scotland doing well, and I enjoy seeing Wales do well.
It's kind of the little brother mentality, isn't it? It's just, we don't like seeing England do well because we are essentially jealous of the success England, or the comparative success England have had in comparison to what we've had.
Yeah.
There we go. It seems like a good time to call halftime after our quick international chat. Should we call it halftime, sir?
Indeed.
Yeah, I could do with a whopper.
Excellent. Let's have a whopper, and we'll see you after the short break.
Nicholas Bentner comes on for the corner. Bentner! What an arrival for him. Arsenal lead again. A super substitution from Arsene Wenger. A first Premier League goal for Nicholas Bentner. It's 2-1 to the Gunners.
Welcome back to the Libero podcast. We're about to get into our investigates chat around the leagues, giving credit where it's due to the lower half of English league football. Chris, do you want to head off? I know you've been following the good people in Colchester.
Yeah, definitely. Colchester unfortunately lost 3-2 at home to Exeter. A bit of an annoying one because Exeter had lost 4 out of the last 5 games, had a pretty shit start to the season, but to be fair, they came out and they played really well. This was like a slightly weird game in that the lead changed hands 3 times. So Exeter went 1-0 up, and then Colchester pulled it back to 2-1, went in 2-1 at half time, and then ended up losing 3-2, which wasn't ideal. But my new favourite player, although I need to figure out how to actually pronounce his name, but Sammy Smodic. There was a ball that was bouncing loose in the area, and he kind of it was sort of thumped at him a bit, but he took it down on his chest beautifully and just snuck it in the near corner. So that's 2 goals in 2 weeks for him. He this boy's going places off the strength of me supporting them for 2 weeks. So yeah, well played. Interesting that the manager McGreal afterwards had listened to an interview, and he was actually really upbeat. He didn't want to kind of moan about the performance or anything like that. He just said Exeter came out and, you know, passed it around really well and made us work hard for it. and they got their goals. It, I mean, Colchester probably should have equalised. They were absolutely battering them with about 15 minutes to go when it was 3-2. There was actually, I think there was a goal disallowed. I think the player who tucked it in wasn't the player who was offside, but it was the player behind him. It probably was. So yeah, a bit gutting, but onwards and upwards. One slightly weird bit of news from Colchester is George Moncur.
Yeah, former West Ham boy, isn't he?
He's a son of John Moncur, former West Ham boy, and I think, yeah, he came through the youth academy. But he left for Barnsley for, I think it was like 500 or 700 grand or something like that, and he turned down Posh Peterborough, and now he's been loaned to Peterborough from Barnsley. So, like, it's a bit strange that he would turn that deal. He came on as a sub for one game, and now he's immediately been loaned back there until January. So, yeah, a bit of a strange one. He was one of the, kind of the two midfield players that left at the end of, left in the summer, who they really, really didn't want to leave. The other one being Alex Gibley, who didn't sign a new contract and moved onwards and upwards to better things. But yeah, not the best week. But there you go. That's Colchester. Come on, the Ewes!
Well, not wanting to be outdone by your 3-2 loss, MK Dons have recorded a 3-2 loss of their own. Thank you very much. Yeah, another disappointing result at the weekend for the Dons. 3-2 loss to Northampton, who people will know have just been promoted while Dons have just been relegated. This was at Northampton, but Dons found themselves down 3 goals down in just 28 minutes.
Wow.
I think the feeling around the club generally is that the spirit hasn't been lifted since the club were relegated last season. Unlike, say, Bolton, who have... Currently, I mean, just 6 games played, obviously, but currently just top of the league. They seem to have bounced back and found some spirit. Whereas,
I think there's a bit of that about there's a bit of that mentality about Colchester as well, because there's been a lot of ins and outs and a lot of players like left on frees who they only had the season before and kind of went with. So they've kind of like, in a way, they've lost some of their better players, but they've also kind of shed a lot of the baggage, and I think that's probably helped with their like, you know, good start to the season.
I actually watched some of this game. It actually wasn't. It was a bit of a rip snorter of a game.
Yeah, good game. Yeah, very good game. I mean, they left it a bit late. They did leave it very late to show their fight. But once they got back into the game, you know, they did get their 2 goals, albeit the second, I think, in like the 95th minute. But it was a real contrast to see on the pitch, because you had Northampton, who scored some early goals, got their, you know, had that intensity at the start of the game, and basically won the game in 28 minutes. They're now 30 games unbeaten, and they should be given credit for that, having getting promoted last season. That's an incredible achievement on its own. And it's another sort of, you know, cliche, but it does show how important momentum is in football, and perhaps especially at the lower leagues, where there isn't like an Eden Hazard or an Alexis Sanchez to get you out of a tough spot. There's not so many mercurial characters knocking around. You know, when you've got a good team spirit, you've got, you know, fitness, or you've got that belief, it really can mean a lot, especially when you're going through the leagues. I know another one of the clubs near us, Dagenham and Redbridge, you saw them go from, you know, non-league to League 2 to League 1 very quickly on the back of, one, a strong side and good scouting, but also the fact that they had a lot of belief there and the system set up. And, you know, that's so important. And you did see that contrast on the field there with NK Dons and with Northampton. The worry now is, like, they need to arrest this. They've not won at home yet. There's only 6 games in, but, you know, manager Carl Robinson, he was getting annoyed about the early goals. He basically said, and it's a quote to the website, he said, it's not good enough. They had 3 shots on target in the 30 minutes and a 3-0 down. We're fighting an uphill battle from there on in. And then he went on to say, we need to dig deep and find something from somewhere very quickly, obviously wanting to arrest the situation. He knows that this team should be far higher up the league.
It's always a bit worrying when managers start talking like that and always rounding on the players, and, you know, it's not good enough, and, you know, we need to dig deep and find something from somewhere. Is kind of, you know, you hear that, but then like, just to say very quickly, it seems like he's trying to heap a bit of pressure on the players. You say they had 3 shots on target in the first 30 minutes and they're 3-0 down. Do you know, were they getting like battered, or were they just like,
well, unlucky? I think it was just, if you look at the stats at the end of the game, they're very, very even. It's 50% possession each. The shots are like one, I think it's one in favour of Northampton. There's no stats there that would tell you either team dominated. And, you know, fair enough, the scoreline's 3-2. It's a one goal loss. But, you know, there's lots of quotes from players saying how they're disappointed and they feel for the fans. They're going through it too. In terms of, you know, they've been through a season where they've been relegated and they've not started this season well. So there does seem to be that mentality sitting around that they need to just lift. And as you rightly point out, you know, you don't need that kind of added pressure and that kind of rounding on the team. I hope they get back on track because we know this team can play good football. Mm-hmm. They were promoted, you know, in very, very good form when they went up to the Championship. They've lost some players, obviously, but they've gained some too. And it'd be nice to see them playing to their potential again. The worry is now that they do have Bolton on Saturday. They're top of the table. They have bounced back, as I mentioned before. And you do wonder if they're going to get anything from that game in their current form. It's a big game because obviously it's two relegated teams. You feel like they should be matched for them, but on current form, you can't see anyone but Bolton winning this. So it's a big game for MK.
Good
roundup.
I like it.
Yeah, good, good. Well, thank you very much. Matt, over to you for a bit more Dawn chat.
More than happy to see the fake Dons being tracked by the mighty real, the real Wimbledon, the actual Wimbledon, the fanned Wimbledon. So whereas last week we had an annoying last minute draw because of a last minute goal, we've actually got the flip side of that this time, and we had a cheeky 91st minute winner at home to Chesterfield.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah, can't be that. Big fan of that.
It's almost Big Sam. Big Sam-esque.
Yeah, Big Sam-esque. I think that's what they're looking at. And that has got us out of the relegation places as well. So we're up to the heady heights of 19th. Just checking that MK Dons are 2 points ahead of us in 6 places. There will be a weekly update on how we track against the fake Dons.
Have you already played them this season? Or
No, there's still 2 fixtures left to come.
Yeah, yeah. They're coming.
I think we need an MK special that week.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should maybe try and make an effort and get to those games.
Yeah, would you want it some kind of ESPN style debate off between me and Matt about who's better, or do you want it in a kind of non-yank way where we actually give some sensible chat?
No, I think you should go and sit in opposite ends, and we'll do that terrible thing that Sky Sports used to do, where they used to let you watch like with fans doing commentary.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Sounds about right. So I think this is actually a good win for AFC. Chesterfield have done doing okay. They've got Chad Evans up front for them, which, you know, for this league, if Chad Evans can start scoring, that should get Chesterfield going quite well. They're up in 12th, having started the season with 2 wins, a draw, and then a win before this weekend. They've scored a fair few goals. They've scored 9 in 6, but they are also conceding quite a few, so looks like they're a little bit unbalanced. But like I said, Chad Evans is a good striker for this league and should really get Chesterfield's top half of the league, I think, if he can stay out of prison and fit. The game was pretty even. As I said, there was, you know, 55-45 possession. Shots on target are pretty even. Shots pretty even. So there wasn't a huge amount in it, which kind of, if you look at the summary of the game, AFC won on a 91st minute winner. Chesterfield's goal was actually an own goal. So, you know, 11 actually scored. It was an okay result. I think this would be a good result to get AFC back with a little bit of confidence. I think they're only ever going to be aiming probably mid-table this season, would be my guess, having kind of followed them for the full 2 or 3 weeks now. But I'll be interested to see what they've got next week, because they've got another home game next week against the might of Sheffield United.
That'll be a tough game.
Yeah, I watched a fair bit of non-league football. Not League One and League Two football this weekend. What with there being no Premiership, and I actually watched Sheffield United play at the weekend as well. And they are they're really struggling again. I watched them play against Peterborough, and they've really struggled. They're a team that's kind of languished down in League One now for. I think they thought they were going to bounce back quite quickly, but I think they've been down here for the best part of a decade now. I think they've been down in the League One for maybe 6 or 7 years.
It's a weird thing, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you guys agree, but like growing up, I still think when I think of Sheffield United and I think of Sheffield Wednesday, I know Sheffield Wednesday were unlucky not to come up last season, but like I still think them of as kind of established Premier League sides. I feel like they're massive sides, just, and to think of them in League One and the Championship respectively is kind of, it's still a little bit weird to me.
Yeah, it was, who was like trying to think of sort of classic players? So Sheffield Wednesday would be like Benito Carboni?
David
and Sheffield United. Sheffield United's maybe like what, James
Dan
Beattie or something?
Don't he was Dan there for a while, wasn't he? Chris Bart Williams. Chris Bart Williams. There's one. Yes.
Jagielka came through, didn't he? Michael Brown came through Sheffield United.
Yeah.
You actually forget that Jagielka played quite a lot of his football in the lower leagues before he moved to Everton, because he's been at Everton so long.
Yeah.
He actually moved to Everton at, he wasn't young by any stretch of imagination, but he wasn't old. But he kind of moved, he had a good few seasons at Sheffield United before he made the move to Everton, but because he's been there for so, so long, you forget he actually played quite a lot at Sheffield United.
Yeah, he's been there for about 8 seasons.
He was a midfielder as well. He wasn't a natural defender at Sheffield United or other clubs. He started off as a midfielder and has moved backwards.
I was listening to a podcast today that described Everton's centre-back buying policy as Italian. they value experience above all else, so they just basically sign the oldest centre-backs they can find. Get your Ashley Williams.
Get Mario Yepes in. So just coming back to AFC Wimbledon, you say mid-table is as much as they can expect, or you would realistically expect them to achieve this year. I mean, only a few games gone, but do you think that is attainable? Do you think they'll get there?
I think so. I think it's going to be maybe lower half. If you look at the League One table, there's a lot of big teams in this league now. Just going down from the top, you've got Bolton, Bradford, both being Premiership teams in the Premiership era. You've got Swindon Town, you've got MK Dons, there's a decent amount of money in MK, and they've just come down, so they'll be expecting to go back up. Sheffield United, not a small club. Coventry, down in 23rd. There are a lot of big clubs in the lower leagues, especially in League One. So I think, you know, top 8 or 10 positions are going to be taken up by, I would imagine, the bigger clubs in the league, and I think anything below that is probably a shootout. It's as tough a league, from what I can gather so far, as the Championship is. So I think it's a tough league to get out of, and it's a tough league to do well in. So,
yeah, cool, excellent. Well, we'll move away from our Libero Pod Investigates. We should find a better name than that. That sounds like
it's Libero Pod Investigates. Get it right.
Yeah, according to the edited document, it says Investigates. That's shoddy. And I imagine Andy Lane will be reporting back next week. We'll make him go first, of course.
The almighty Pompey.
Before we sign off, I know you guys covered the transfer window as well as you possibly could have done without me last
Thanks.
Time. But,
Thanks for the backhanded compliment.
Well, you know, it's all you deserve. But just a quick mention to Big Game Bentner. Rumours today that he's off to Nottingham Forest. Is there a better example of a man who's kind of thrown away a lot of potential? This is a guy. I was one shocked to find out he's 28.
So is he on a free then?
He's on a free. He's out of contract. He's let go by Wolfsburg.
There's a newspaper article just dying to be written about the players. Did you hear about Jan and Via? He's a free agent, and he was like. He basically sent a tweet saying that he was in tears because Sunderland didn't want to re-sign him.
No, he's not a free agent. He was free to go to Sunderland from Rubin Kazan, but then they suddenly turned. They were going to let him go free, and then suddenly on the last minute they turned it into an 8.5 million needed to buy him, and that's why Sunderland dropped out.
Good knowledge. Okay. Well, that makes a bit more sense.
So unless he's still floating around in the northeast somewhere looking for a club, I would imagine he's back in Russia.
And Villa's another player, though, that you feel had a lot of potential.
Floating around in the North Sea.
And Villa's another player who, again, looked like he had a lot of potential. Not to create too many parallels with Bentner, because Bentner seems to be a case one on his own. But and just seems to be floating around these teams when he was... You know, it seemed like he'd been picked for far bigger and better things. I know Villa's had a few personality issues, but Bentner's one of his own. One, I couldn't, like I said, I couldn't believe he was 28. He's had loan spells.
Had a few personality issues as well.
Yeah. He's been all over the place. He's been to Sunderland, Birmingham. He's been to Juve. He's been to Wolfsburg. He had 45 goals for Arsenal in 170 odd games. But he's with Arsenal, like, and those other loanee teams between 2005 and 2014. That's 9 years of not finding a permanent club and just dicking around on a lot of money. But the guy can score goals. I mean, he's got nearly 30 goals in 72 appearances for his country. And he's shown promise of a really good striker. I get really frustrated when there's players like this, like Mario Balotelli, like Jan and Villa, who show so much potential. And if they can put it together, you know they've got so much in them, but just seem to fail to put it together. That you feel like the maturity they'll need, they'll get when their ability has lost them.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think who the kind of 90s equivalent of Bednar, someone that you just absolutely love, but it's just like, basically seems like a total arsehole, isn't really very good and very effective, but you just can't help but love him anyway. I'm just desperately trying to think of who the 90s equivalent would be.
That's a difficult one.
I mean, Fabrizio Ravanelli for Derby was a bit like that.
Pierre Van Hooijdonk.
Pierre Van Hooijdonk, that's an excellent shot.
He didn't give a shit, did he? He was amazing. I'll keep scoring, even if none of the team wants to celebrate with me. I love that. The other thing, I just wanted to cast a eye over some decent articles that, Chris, you pointed out on the over at ESPN this week, just regarding the transfer window. A lot's been made, obviously, of the record fees and the totalizers and the hundreds of millions being splashed everywhere. But there was a couple of decent articles that you felt put this in perspective.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting because the thing that always gets quoted in the press is the transfer fee. And what this was doing, I mean, it's not rocket science, it's pretty straightforward. But instead of quoting the fee, they were taking the fee, which is actually traditionally, like, or normally spread out over the terms of the contract anyway. So let's say that it's, I'm going to have to do some maths there. Let's say it's 20 million and it's a 4-year contract, then you'd effectively be paying £5 million a year.
Yeah.
And then what it was doing was taking that sort of approach, and then also chucking in the wages as best as they can from what's been reported. And then what they were doing is giving like a cost per year per player.
Yeah.
Which I thought was just, they ran through a massive whole list of players and told you the cost per year. So someone like N'Golo Kante, even though Chelsea paid, you know, £30 million for him, because his wages are quite low and quite modest at 70 grand a week or whatever, his cost per year is actually crazy, crazy low. Whereas Zlatan's cost per year is obviously very, very high because he's on whatever it is, 280 grand a week. So yeah, I just thought it was a pretty interesting new, like, not that new, but interesting way of thinking about how much players actually cost teams. And it just got me thinking, like, a couple of questions. Like, if a player gets bought for £20 million on a 4-year contract, and then 2 years later he gets sold.
I'm liking his £20 million 4-year contract. It's good.
They're all £20 million 4-year contracts to me. But £20 million, and then after 2 years, when they've only paid off £10 million, he gets sold. Like, what happens? Do they? I assume they just kind of continue paying on the timeline that they set out, or maybe I can't think that they suddenly have to pay up or anything like that. But yeah, it all sounds a bit like it blows my mind, like mortgages. No one, I don't really know how they work either.
No one does. We all just sign the dotted line, mate. Just sign them. It'd be really hard to work out Arsenal's ones because they're all for an undisclosed fee on a long-term contract, aren't they? So be pretty tough to do the maths on those. Let's move on just to the upcoming weekend's fixtures. I know, by the way, before we move that, just to say, worth giving that shout, head over to ESPNFC.com. Couple of good articles just on the transfer window there. But let's move on to this weekend. There's a couple of big games coming up that I know we just want to cover before we head off. The Manchester Derby takes place this weekend. Big, big game in the context of this season for so many reasons. The aforementioned transfer fees, the expectations of each club, the new managers. What are your predictions for the game, guys?
I genuinely don't know how to call this one. I can't see which way it's going to go. I could see Man United shutting Man City out and like sneaking a 1 or even a 2-0 win. I could see Man City coming over and like blitzing them, you know, in 15 minutes and being like 2 goals up and then holding out for the rest of the game or anything else, you know, it could be anything for me. I'm a bit gutted. I'm going to miss this. I've got 2 weddings this weekend. Yes, that's right. 2 weddings to go to this weekend.
That'll learn you for being popular.
I will be on a train, when this is going, which is a bit shit.
If I had to nail my colours to the mast, I'd probably say a 1-0 or 2-1 to United. If I had to be pushed into a result.
Yeah, you think Mourinho's got this?
Yeah, I think so. I think while City look good going forward, they do look like they can concede a goal or two in the games they've had so far. Haven't been exactly stellar opposition, and they've managed to concede a couple of goals. Mm-hmm. So I think there's something to be.
I'm just thinking about those City wide players against those Man United fullbacks, though. They're just going to tear them to shreds, aren't they?
Well, Luke Shaw's back.
They're if just going to tear them Luke to Shaw. Shreds, aren't they?
I see your point.
We're not in fantasy football points here. Luke Shaw is quite valuable there, but can he defend?
Real football.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Rich? Prediction?
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree. I feel like Mourinho's got this for almost exactly the reasons you say. I don't, like, Mourinho's first thing is he works from the back forward. He tries to create a solid team that can close people down, that can stop other teams playing, and if needed, park buses. I can see he's been able to frustrate Pep in the past. He knows how that team works, and that team isn't up to speed yet. We've made a lot of, you know, a lot's been said about how quickly Man City have got into Pep's style and how quickly it's obvious his influence has taken on that team. But, you know, we're talking about seasoned managers here. I think if Mourinho knows how to shut down that team, and that team isn't fully formed yet, it isn't full of the players he wants it to be, then I think he might have a bit of joy. And there's so much experience at United, you know, with Ibrahimovic, with Rooney and things like that, that are used to a big game. They're used to a City derby as well. I feel like they might edge it. I'm going to say United win this.
Maybe they'll even pick up big game Bentner on a free just for a little bit more big game mentality.
Big game mentality, absolutely, absolutely.
I quite like the look of Stoke Spurs. I'd like to see Wilfred Bonny start and see how he's going to play in that team.
I think we spoke last week about. Well, I think I spoke last week about the Stoke team and actually looking at them front to back. It did seem that they were just missing when they've got all their players fit. They were just missing one player, and I wonder if Wilfred Bonny can be that player for them.
Yeah, I mean, Bonny's an upgrade on the strikers they've got. I mean, Arnautovic has obviously played well, but he doesn't always play up top. He can play on the left, he can play just off. So Bonny does give them that focal point that I think they were hoping they would get with Mamadouf, but I think now with Bonny they've really got that focal point. They've got Premier League experience, they know he can score goals. And the service, like you say, if they're all fit, the service he can get could be pretty outstanding. And Spurs, obviously.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, it's quite a beast. Yeah, it's quite a beastly forward line now with like Arnautovic and Bojan gets fit, and then having Bonny there, who I think, you know, should slot straight in. I'm pretty up for that one. Should be good.
Just one more game before we leave, guys. Just wanted to give a quick mention because obviously they look like the headline games from this weekend. But I feel like Middlesbrough Palace might be a decent one. Palace are obviously, they've just bought Benteke. You know, we all know the cliche about Pardew in a slump and how they've started the season. Middlesbrough have got a good start to the season. They've made some excellent signings. They're playing like a Premiership team. Another point we've made before. I can see that being a really good game and a really important game for both teams. I'll be interested to see how Palace play set up against Middlesbrough after Middlesbrough has had such a strong start.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see.
I think Middlesbrough. Yeah, I think Borough might walk this one. I think Palace look all over the place. I think Borough look like they've got their shit together. I can see like a 2-0 win. The game that I'm quite excited about is Burnley Hull. Like, what the fuck is going to happen at Hull?
No one knows. It's as good a time as any on that. Once again, what the fuck is going on at Hull is as good a time as any to end the Libero podcast. Thank you everybody for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with another Libero podcast. Do join us then. See you later, guys.
See you Speak later. Easy.
Right. Take care, everyone. See you soon. Anybody will soon walk through that door at Fat Sam, Grand Slam. Speak easy. I was able to find you a table that's room for just one.